Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
All you Trekkies and TV addicts, don't mean to diss, don't mean to bring static. All you Klingons in your grandma's house, grab your backstreet friend and get loud. Blowing doors off inches.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1985, New York punk rockers the Beastie Boys moved from the post-punk music underground to sign with Def Jam Records. In 86, they hit it big with License to Ill and became the first white rap group to make it big in hip-hop. And they just got bigger. Beastie Boys bassist Adam Yauch, a.k.a. MCA, has been at the heart of the band from the beginning and has reached out into political activism and filmmaking. While the Beastie Boys have racked up critical acclaim for their cutting-edge music, Adam Yauch has been wielding a camera and editing board on the side. He's here today to talk about it all and about his new film, following the country's tip-top high school basketball stars, gunning for that number one spot. This hour, On Point Beastie Boy Adam Yauch on life, music, video, and hoops. You can join the conversation. Are you a Beastie Boys fan? Can you see why this hip-hop star would take his camera to the basketball court? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Adam Yauch.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great to have you. Founding member of one of the most influential hip-hop groups in modern music, his new hip-hop-fueled film is about Harlem's legendary Rucker Park and the intense world of top-tier high school basketball, astounding young players dreaming of and often going to the NBA. It's called Gunning for That Number One Spot. Adam Yauch, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, you've been making film for a long time, video for a long time, but most of it was of your own performances in the Beastie Boys, your music videos. What took you over into the world of hoops and Rucker Park there in the sort of, in the projects in Harlem?
A friend of mine was putting together this all-star game up in Harlem, and he was actually asking me for advice on how to document the game, and I don't know. It seemed interesting. I think a big part of it was hearing his enthusiasm for just bringing the top players together. Normally these guys are split up in different ways by their sneaker affiliations or
even in high school, sneaker affiliations already in there.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, they're not getting money from the sneaker companies, but they're kind of tied to these. They're sort of tied to one company or another, and they go to different camps and play in different all-star games. And so this was really like the first time that all the top players in the country were being brought together in one game, regardless of they're normally split up by their class, whether they're seniors or juniors, and these were just going to be the top high school players regardless.
The Elite 24, incredible players. The game, which you show a lot of with a great hip-hop soundtrack, was astounding to watch. Final score, high school game, 139-141, if I got that right.
Yeah.
You followed 8 of these kids. And they are astounding basketball players. Give us a sense. Introduce us to some of them and where they've ended up already. It's 2006. You shot this. Some now in the NBA.
Yeah, we shot it in end of August, beginning of September 06. And there are 4 of them that were first-round draft picks this year. Michael Beasley was the second draft pick, and then Kevin Love and Jared Bayless and Dante Green were all first round picks, and 4 of the other guys aren't eligible yet. Kyle Singler could have been eligible, but he decided to stay in college a little bit longer.
Mm.
But they're from all around the country, and they're from different racial and sort of economic backgrounds, and they're all interesting guys, and it's really interesting to see how this game kind of brings together these guys from really diverse backgrounds and how they get along with each other. It's definitely interesting.
And remind us of the significance of this iconic outdoor asphalt basketball court, Rucker Park.
Yeah, people refer to Rucker Park as being like the mecca of basketball.
The Rucker.
Yeah, the Rucker. So a lot of times people want to just come up there to see it. Even like when NBA players come to town, a lot of times they come up there and play at the Rucker.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played there. Wilt Chamberlain played there. Kobe Bryant, Nate Archibald, Connie Hawkins, and right on down. We've got a little tape here of Julius Erving, NBA legend, Dr. J, who, as a native New Yorker, played there as a young man. He says Rucker is a tough spot.
I wouldn't even try to compare it with college ball because the games down here are a great deal more physical. And I think there's a lot more emotion put into the game.
Dr. J right there on the Rucker Park, the mecca of basketball. Describe it for us, Adam Yalk, if you would, just the setting.
I mean, if you just saw it, it just looks like a regular park. I mean, these days, actually, they have kind of like a green, I don't know what you call it, like the...
It's painted up a little bit, some kind of rubber paint on top.
It's a little softer. It's like the way you see tennis courts or something like that. And there's like some cement bleachers and, you know, some projects around. And it's sort of right by the bridge that leads over to the Bronx.
So it's that kind of tough, urban, middle-of-the-city basketball with everything that comes with that, and you follow these guys. Here's one of them. You mentioned Jared Bayless. Traveled all the way from his home in Arizona to mix it up at Rucker Park. They had a powerful sense coming in here of what a big deal this was. Of course, it was shot in 06. Last year, Bayless had a standout year at the University of Arizona, and he was just selected 11th overall in the NBA draft by the Indiana Pacers. Here he is.
Some of the stories I've heard about Rucker Park are just all the legends that have been made coming out of there just playing one time. You can break your reputation or you can help your reputation going there and playing. And hopefully when I go there, I'm helping my reputation.
Everybody was looking to help their reputation. I mean, these are kids who are amazing airborne players. You get the feeling that you are seeing the future of the NBA when they get out on that court.
Yeah, it's an amazing class, too. I mean, there have been other classes recently where they're, you know, there are more kids coming in from Europe and different things happening, but this was an exceptional bunch of kids.
You know, and I couldn't help thinking about something about the physics of basketball, the way they play it, out at the extreme, way out on the edge, and the sound of hip-hop. I mean, that's the sound of your soundtrack woven through here, but when you watch somebody like, was it Brennan Jennings out of Compton?
Brandon, yeah.
Brandon. Man, oh man, just magic, absolutely magic, and it seemed to work extremely well with your school of music.
Yeah, I think there is something very synonymous between where hip-hop is at now and where basketball is at. It's sort of, it just kind of makes sense. They almost feel like two expressions of a similar feeling.
Maybe not least in the way that they're both arenas in which sometimes urban kids can go from the street to stardom very quickly.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but I guess that's true.
Here's a little bit from Tyreek Evans out of Pennsylvania in your film, gunning for that number one spot. And he's saying that there are parallels between life and the game on the hard court. Evans is headed to the powerhouse program at the University of Memphis this fall. Film, as we're saying, is a great hip-hop soundtrack. You'll hear a little bit here from My Lifestyle by artist Fat Joe.
Basketball is just like street life these days. You get a lot of people that came in there with a lot of problems in their life. Some people came in there with a silver spoon in their mouth. You can't let nobody think that life is easy because people use that. They take advantage of it, even if it's on the court.
That's actually not Tyreek speaking, but it's a close friend of Tyreek's named Solomon, who's kind of hanging out with him there.
Yeah.
And but that's definitely an interesting clip. I always like hearing him say that.
I mean, there's life. They've got to make it. You know, these kids, they're very young. You've got 16 as high school sophomores even in here, some of them.
Yeah.
And they are amazingly gifted, talented players. They also are very well aware of the millions that may be in their future. Did you like them, Adam Yalk?
Yeah, no, they were all great kids. I mean, originally my plan was to do profiles on 8 of the kids and then pick 5 of them to use in the film, and I actually ended up using all 8 because
I couldn't cut them down.
I couldn't even cut one of them out. But, I mean, it's very interesting. Where Tyreek comes from is Chester, PA, and that's a really rough neighborhood. That reminds me of, like, the way the South Bronx or parts of Brooklyn used to be when I was a kid in the 70s. Like, you don't see that as much in New York in the same way. Like, literally every other building was an abandoned building in his neighborhood, and it was definitely rough. And it is interesting to see that in contrast to the more comfortable background that somebody like Kyle or Kevin comes from.
Describe those for us. I mean, you've got who was it? Kevin Love, whose dad was Stan Love in the NBA, and whose uncle was in the Beach Boys.
Yes,
Not exactly living hard on the street.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they live in Oregon, and you see in the film they live in a nice house, and he's out, you know, shooting with a like a miniature basketball in his pool at like a little hoop that's by their pool, and you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being comfortable, but sure. It's definitely interesting to see that contrast between the backgrounds.
I thought that must be another parallel for you. I mean, you went right into the world of hip-hop, but you came out of a fairly middle-class or affluent white world, but we're mixing it up with a lot of guys in the 80s and right on through who really did come up tough.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a similarity there.
Sympathy with, or I don't know, some kind of empathy with both sides of that coin on the basketball court then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something else. And when they get going, I mean, they just fly. They really do seem to sort of work the outer boundaries of physics when they're working the ball up and down the court. And just amazing to see.
Yeah, and they have different skills. You know, some of them, like you see the way that Brandon handles the ball. And also just his personality, like Brandon likes to pass the ball a lot. There are times when he could easily take it up himself, but he passes it anyway. And there are other guys like Kevin that have more like a big man game or like Beasley. It's interesting.
Interesting to see how a top hip-hop musician with a little video film and an editing board mixes it up with the world of tip-top high school basketball. My guest this hour is Adam Yauch, founding member of the Beastie Boys, 3-time Grammy Award-winning hip-hop group, one of the most influential acts in modern music. He's out with a new film, Gunnin' for that number one spot, about high school basketballers at the top of the game playing at Rucker Park in Harlem. You can join the conversation. Are you ready now for some hip-hop basketball Beastie Boys style? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK with Adam Yauch. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Woo! Back again.
That's right.
Luda.
Feel this.
This gets meaner and meaner each time, baby.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with Adam Yauch of the pioneering out-of-the-box hip-hop group The Beastie Boys, who's out with a new film, Gunnin' for that number one spot. It's about astounding high school basketball players headed for the NBA, and it's got quite a hip-hop soundtrack behind us right now, a little bit from Ludacris with his song Number One Spot. You can join the conversation. Are you a stone-cold Beastie Boys fan? Down with Yauch, MCA, and Mike D, and Ad Rock over the years? Were you there when they went from punk to hip-hop when they fronted for Run DMC? Have you seen the Beastie Boys' own music videos over the years? Did you know that was mainly Adam Yauch's handiwork? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. And do you see the link between maybe the Beastie Boys' world of hip-hop and the world of super high-tier high school basketball? 800-423-TALK. Let's begin to take some calls, Adam, if we may. Let's go to Plainville, Connecticut. And Brian. Brian, you're on the air with Beastie Boys. Adam Yauch.
Hi, Tom. Hey. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Oh, awesome. I've been a huge fan for over 20 years now. Seen you in concert a few times, got all your CDs. I just want to thank you for being such an inspiration over the years and your longevity and your passion behind all your causes.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. I think it's great that, you know, you're branching out into other things. It takes a fan out of just listening to your music to supporting your causes, to having interest in these different facets of the world, you know, whether it be basketball, whether it be, you know, PETA or even, you know, the elections. You know, if you have all these millions of fans behind you and you support a particular cause or have a particular passion, the fans just go right to it. And I'm one of them, and I just want to say thank you.
Oh, all right, thanks. Yeah, I'm not sure if they do. I sometimes wonder how many people come along or check the stuff out. But you know, sometimes, like with the Tibet stuff, we have tried to kind of point some light in that direction, you know. But I don't know. I think some people take a look.
Brian, does it make sense for you for Adam Yauch, Beastie Boy, to be putting his arm around top basketball?
Oh, sure. I know they've been fans of basketball for many years. I know other bands like the Red Chili Peppers, big basketball fans, and you know it's only a matter of time before Adam and the boys had something to do with that too.
Brian, thanks for your call. Adam Yauch, give us a sense for, I mean, Brian's a fan and you've got lots, but not everybody will understand your kind of political agenda beyond the music itself, beyond the videos. You mentioned Tibet. What else have you had on your dance card, yourself or as Beastie Boys?
Mainly Tibet has really been something that I've put a lot of energy towards. Certainly, you know, environmental issues are important to me also, and a number of things. But
since the mid-1990s with Tibet, a series of concerts that you've had to benefit.
Yeah, we put together the Tibetan Freedom Concerts, helped to organize those.
How did you get involved with that? How did you latch on to that particular cause?
I was traveling in Nepal and met some Tibetan refugees that had just escaped from Tibet, had come over the mountains and were on their way to India. And I guess through meeting them firsthand, really kind of made me want to find out more about what was going on and with Chinese oppression in Tibet.
Tibet has been hot in the news in recent months with the Olympics headed to Beijing. What do you think about all that? President Bush is going. Some are, some aren't. Most everybody is. China's a big, powerful magnet right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting. I think when those uprisings started happening on March 10th and continuing after that, in a way, it was very exciting to see Tibetan people rising up and you know, expressing themselves. But it's also very scary because immediately the Chinese government kicked out all the international media there and started broadcasting within China, just broadcasting video of a few isolated events where Tibetan people were violent towards Chinese stores. Or the burning Chinese stores or flipping over cars or whatever. There were a few incidents that they played over and over and over again on television, which created a lot of sort of racial tension, a lot of hatred from young Chinese people towards Tibetan people. And so there's a very sad part of it. And it's scary, a lot of what went on, because the Chinese military, once the international media was kicked out, was probably very destructive towards Tibetan people. There were a lot of Tibetan people killed and imprisoned and tortured. And so it's very intense times. And it'll be interesting to see if some change comes through it. But I would say, in terms of the Olympics, if you're asking my opinion about that at all, I feel like the Olympic Committee really should have insisted that the international media be allowed to stay in Tibet and see what goes on. I think that if China is going to host the Olympics, then they have to allow the world to see what's going on.
And the world of Tibet is not just a political world to you. It's also a spiritual issue. You've paid a lot of attention to Buddhism. How does Buddhism flow into the life of a hip-hop artist? Is there a connection?
I don't know. It sounds crazy when you put it in those terms. I don't know.
Well, but yet they both absorb a lot of your time and have over the years.
Yeah.
People might not first think, oh yeah, I'm sure he's like a cool meditating Buddhist guy.
Yeah, I probably should spend more time meditating than I do.
Let's get another call from Joe in Middletown, Connecticut. Joe, you're on the air with Adam Yauch.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good, Adam. You know, I got to give the obligatory shout out. I've been listening to the Beastie Boys forever. I cut my teeth on Hella Nasty.
All right.
Been a fan ever since. But I'm teaching that Upward Bound program in Middletown, and I got a bunch of like 15, 16-year-old kids, and all they talk about is the new stuff, is the Lil Wayne and the 50 Cent, and I just wanted to know what you thought about the new stuff that's coming out and where hip-hop's going, and also, how do I get them back to the old school, man? Because for me, it's all the Big Daddy Kane's and the old Beastie Boys stuff and Run DMC and whatnot, but I don't know. I just wanted to know your opinion on where you think hip-hop's going, whether we lost something or whether we're going to keep gaining it.
Big question. What do you say?
I mean, I don't know. My feeling is kind of that music that you grow up on, kind of like music that you connect with when you're probably like 15 to like, you know, 25 years old, whatever, in that realm is music that kind of just clicks for you on some deeper level, and that always sort of, I think, through your life feels like the right form of music or the perfect form of music. So I usually try to keep that in perspective, you know, because I definitely remember playing like hardcore music and my mom just thinking like, what is this? You know, like, what? And so, I mean, I don't know. If you're saying that your students aren't into what's going on with new hip hop, then I don't know. I don't really know what the answer is to that. But I like some of what's going on. I definitely like Nas and Jay-Z and some of the artists that are out there making records. I think there's some interesting stuff going on.
Adam, listen with us, if you would, to a little bit of the soundtrack from your documentary, Gunning for That Number One Spot. You mentioned Jay-Z, of course, a superstar, very prominently featured on the track. Here's a piece from 2003, Jay-Z, My First Song. You tell us if this is new school, old school. What? Here's Jay-Z from Gunning for the Number One Spot.
My struggle, the song that I sing to you is my everything. Treat my first like my last, and my last like my first, and my birth is the same as when I came. It's my joy and my tears, and the laughter it brings to me is my everything.
Jay-Z with My First Song from soundtrack of Gunning for That Number One Spot. All right, you're the hip-hop artist. How do you, is this new school, old school? Where do you place it? What's he up to?
Okay, new school, old school is definitely a relative concept, so it depends on how you judge. But in hip-hop, more than in any other form, I think that new is critical, and things change so fast and move so fast, and the way that people's tastes jump ahead, things that are a month old are already kind of old school in a sense, you know. So from that sense, this is more old school Jay-Z, but in the, you know, if you look at it in the scope of how long Beastie Boys is around, this is relatively new school. This is, you know, like within the last 10 years or whatever, but it's so it's relative.
And how did you decide what to put behind these amazing athletes? I mean, you've got Jay-Z, Kool and the Gang, Ludacris, Nas, MIA, a bunch of Beastie Boys on here also, Africa, Bambaataa on, House of Pain, NWA, Public Enemy, even the Staples Singers. But
yeah.
And you've cut the music or the film, I don't know, I guess you've cut the video to go to the music. I mean, when they're playing in this epic game, it's almost like a music video. How do you make that happen?
Well, a lot of it is the traditional way of filmmaking is to cut your picture, you know, basically cut your story and then hand it off to somebody to score.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that traditional filmmaking is done. And since I come from more of a background of making music videos and from a background in music, I actually prefer to cut to music. So we mostly in the editing room, my editor and I would drop in music and then cut to that. And so a lot of it, if you're asking about the music that's in there, most of it is just stuff that I like or just felt like dropping in, trying out, and we just try different things. Yeah, some of it is music from the 70s, some of it is from the 80s or 90s. But it's just whatever felt like worked in the situation, and it is definitely cut to the music.
Did you pay attention to what these young men are listening to themselves?
Not too much. You know, this is a lot of this, and again, you get back to this old school, new school question, because a lot of this music would be considered old school to these kids. Some of these kids are 15, 16 years old, and I'm using hip-hop music, some of it from 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, this is like, you know, like stuff that was around when they were like little kids.
But
to me, it feels kind of new school, some of this stuff that probably seems old school to them.
And now they're 7 feet tall and headed fast for the NBA. Abby's calling from Merrimack, New Hampshire. Abby, you're on the air with Adam Yeo.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Great.
Good. Adam, I just wanted to say that I think your video, So What You Want, way back when, was a fantastic video. And from then on, I really got into videos and looking at how they were made, because I thought it was so creative. So fantastic job with that.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, all your videos are a lot of fun. And it's, I was part of that generation that just grew up with you guys. And I think a lot of us now are having kids, and then some of the kids are coming across your music, and being a teacher, you know, they'll come up to me and say, oh, hey, Mrs. Bergen, check out this awesome band I just found. And, you know, we'll play something from Licensed to Ill or something. And it's a very nice common ground.
Abby, can I ask you about that? And you as well, Adam. I mean, here's I'm going to quote you here from a Newsweek article in 1987. You say you're bringing your kids up on the Beastie Boys. Here's what Newsweek said in 87. The Beastie Boys play the kind of music that parents love to hate. It's loud, disgusting, without redeeming social merit, no melodies, no harmonies, no singing, just a relentless flood of raunchy, rapped-out lyrics punched home by a steady barrage of blaring guitars. Abby, you're raising your kids on that?
I think it's wonderful, and I would much rather have them listening to the Beastie Boys than I think some of the newer stuff that's coming out that's all about, like, you know, look at my booty, blah, 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 in a not-so-wonderful way.
Adam, what do you say? A generation being raised on Beastie Boys and hip-hop?
I mean, I think it's the whole, like, generational thing. I think it's that, like, it's interesting hearing that article from Time Magazine from that
Newsweek,
guy. Newsweek. And he probably wrote that before, just it sounds like just before Licensed Ale became a really big record even. You know, he probably grew up listening to Bebopalula or something with his mom screaming at him.
But being bad is what we're all about. You had on License to Ill, and he's writing about that here. If you're, a 12-year-old child and you're listening to hip-hop or to the Beastie Boys then and now, what do you hope the kids, a child would get out of that?
Get out of what? Out of License to Ill?
Listening to you.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, at the time that the License to Ill was made, I think we were just having fun with it, just trying to say some wild stuff. You know what I mean? Almost like writing a fiction film, like just kind of like trying to say some wild things. I don't think it was much more thought than that. But what would I want someone to get out of it? I mean, some of the music has some more constructive things in it that are cool if somebody gets it out of it, but also if somebody just takes some of the more ridiculous stuff and enjoys it, has fun, laughs, whatever, then that's cool.
Some joy, maybe. Let's get Abby, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Nashville, Tennessee. Preston, you're on the air with Adam Yao.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Adam. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I wanted to share something. When I was in college, I did a play named Chiaroscuro by Israel Horowitz, which I believe, and shoot me if I'm wrong, is the father of one of your band members.
Yeah,
that's right,
yeah,
the playwright and father of Adam Horowitz.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. And it gave me, when I read that, when I performed that play and didn't do it justice, but got the chance to do it anyway, it gave me a chance to recognize the openness and that had to be behind you guys in the form of your parents, in order for you to be able to break the barriers that you broke and mix the things that you mixed. And I'm curious about how your religious background and parental background really propelled that, and what support you may or may not have gotten from your parents and religious background.
Three Jewish kids from New York, Israel Horowitz, dad of one, prominent playwright. What about it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of religion, none of us really grew up with any religion. We're all Jewish in our background, but I don't think that none of us grew up in religious households. My mom grew up in a kosher household, but I didn't. And in terms of, you know, my parents, my father is an artist. He's a painter, and he was an architect for a while, and he's painting again now. That's mainly what he does. And my parents were always really supportive. You know, I think there was a little bit of a difference. Like when I went to college for a couple of years, I wanted to just take music classes, and my dad said, "Yeah, take whatever you want." My mom was kind of like, "Well, you should probably be taking some academics," but you know, they were definitely supportive. I think my mom always had the "you should have something to fall back on" attitude, which I never really did have.
It's hard to do both, isn't it? Was that video camera in your hand part of something to fall back on as you did music videos, or was that just a
real side interest? I don't know. I'm sure my mom would not have seen me with a camera in my hand as something to fall back on. No, I don't think so. But that was definitely a part of my life growing up. I did a lot of photography as a kid. And
had a dark room in your bedroom.
Yeah. Well, not in my bedroom, but in, you know, and there was like...
A little too smelly in the bedroom.
there was a bathroom that I covered up the window on.
Yeah. Adam Yauch is with us, MCA of the Beastie Boys. He's a director of the new documentary, Gunnin', for that number one spot about just astounding high school basketball players. You can join us. Can you see this Beastie Boys eye and ear for soundtrack turned on by the world of young basketball. You can join us at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. We'll go out with a live from the Beastie Boys 2000. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with Adam Yao. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Adam Yao of the pioneering out-of-the-box hip-hop group The Beastie Boys. He's out with a new film, Gunnin' for That Number One Spot. It's about some amazing high school basketball players, many, no doubt, headed for the NBA, then prepping and playing at Rutgers Park in Harlem. Kind of epic game. He shot it in 2006. It's out right now, and it's really something to see. Behind us from the soundtrack of Gunnin' for That Number One Spot, Hate It or Love It from The Game with 50 Cent here as well. It's in the opening sequence of the documentary. Adam Yao, of course, bassist and often singer for the Beastie Boys. He's wielded a camera for a long time as well, video camera in a lot of their music videos, and here directing in a documentary that gets right into the heart of young dreams, urban dreams, black kid dreams, and white kid dreams, too. You've got some big, tall, and not so tall, but great players from all sides of the tracks in this performance. He joins me in the studio, let's listen to just a little bit of the kind of sound around the ball players that he's following. It gives us some insight into what they're up against. I mean, they've got great talent, Adam, but there are also a lot of pressures and expectations on these kids. People want a piece of them, coaches, agents, groupies. I think this is Tyreek Evans with his brother and a friend talking about agents calling and text messaging all the time with offers of help. You'll hear Tyreek at the end.
Look, cuz, look at this. Like, man, your text message, these coaches is worse than your girl.
They all basically say the same thing. Yeah, tell you how much they love you.
They don't know you.
I got it so much, I had to get my text message turned off.
Yeah.
All basically saying how much they love you.
Yeah.
Because they want a piece of these young men's futures.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting seeing these guys getting pulled in every direction, and that's part of what the documentary tries to look at. Is they're getting hit from AAU coaches, from college coaches, from different high school coaches that are interested in them, sneaker companies, and also just sort of the weight of like the expectations of their or hopes of their families and just people from the neighborhood. And it's a lot for a 15 or 16 year old kid to have so many people's hopes and dreams placed on your shoulders. And so that's part of what the film looks at.
And you can see that in their parents and their families, just that they're bursting with pride. I mean, they're all really tasting it, even though in 06, all these young men are in high school, but they are tasting the millions, the future, the acclaim.
The potential is there.
The potential.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit from the documentary with Chris Rivers. He's a Reebok sports marketing director, talking about how early the push is on to form relationship with young basketball stars.
The opportunities of meeting agents, of meeting financial advisors, those type of people are not coming around high school basketball, because if you want to have a relation with a high school kid and their families, 3 or 4 years down the line, when they're in college, you need to meet them when they're in high school.
Early.
Now, Chris is a great guy. He's a really good example of one of the type of people that's really supportive of the kids and protects them. And there are some people around these kids that really are looking out for their best interests, and some of them who have their own interests in mind. And Chris is definitely a good example. He's somebody who worked with us on the film, too, and helped to coordinate the interviews with the kids. And he actually interviewed some of the kids on the West Coast that I couldn't get to. And he was great through this whole process of making the film.
You also talked with the coach, Darren Matsubara, an AAU coach.
Yeah, Mats.
Mats, yeah, nickname. Who's got a pretty level head on his shoulders, but very attuned, and we'll listen here to a little bit of it, very attuned to the expectation and pressures around these high school superstars.
You know, there's a lot of pressure on these individuals because the expectation is so high. They didn't ask for this. It's a situation where a lot of them really want to just be normal individuals. It's a learned process. Their life is not normal.
Their life is not normal. Their skills are not normal. Adam Yauch is with us of the Beastie Boys. Let's take a call from Adam in Arlington, Massachusetts. Adam, you're on the air.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks so much for doing the show today. Interesting timing since I sent an email to the movie website asking when it's going to play in Boston and when it's going to be national. So it's great timing. I've got a question about sort of more basketball movie history. And I'm wondering why, Adam, a movie like Hoop Dreams is so effective and so moving, and a movie like White Man Can't Jump, or even He Got Game, which I thought had its moments, just isn't effective. You know, you don't get that connection.
Well, I mean, there's probably a lot of reasons. I think one of the main things that really good filmmakers are able to do is pacing. But with White Man Can't Jump or something, I don't really know. But I mean, Hoop Dreams is a great film, and they followed those kids for years, and that's a fascinating film. But I don't know. I don't know if I could nail it down to one reason why one of those films works and the other one doesn't. There's probably a lot of reasons.
What did you think of these kids' hunger? I mean, you must have had it yourselves starting out punk rockers. Maybe you were just having fun, but you went pretty big pretty fast. But these are very hungry boys, young men, and also incredibly competitive. I mean, they just ooze
the
competitive spirit. It's almost overwhelming with some of them. What did you personally make of that?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. I mean, they're good guys. They're definitely competitive, but I don't think they're competitive in a destructive way. It's almost like, I mean, it's just part of their nature. I think it's, you know, one of the factors that makes a great ball player. You know, part of it is physical ability, and part of it is competitiveness.
There's somewhere in there they're talking about how in the hip-hop backdrop makes a great soundtrack for this, that you can't show too much softness or too much light humor. If you're in this world, if you're going to be on that court, you've got to kind of show a tough face.
Maybe sometimes. I'm not sure, because it did seem to me like sometimes they had fun with their game too. Maybe that's when their team was ahead, but some of the guys, like even Beasley, when he's behind, like he's very competitive and he talks trash the whole time.
Yes.
But Beasley's kind of having fun with it, with like the trash talking too.
Here's a little bit from the soundtrack again. This goes all the way back to 1988, N.W.A. Straight Out of Compton.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
NWA 1988, you had Brandon Jennings straight out of Compton. Did you feel some of that in him? I mean, they say on air, you know, his father didn't stick around. He's kind of raised by coaches in a way, and an absolutely magical player. You know, is there an anger piece driving these kids?
I mean, I didn't see a lot of anger in Brandon, actually. He's a really warm kid from the bit of experience that I had around him, and he's actually a really interesting guy, because right now he's in a situation where he may not go to college next year. He's decided that he's going to go straight and play in Europe for a year.
These guys, he was 16 and 06, so he's maybe 18 now, and he's going to Europe because why?
Well, these guys have to spend 1 year out. After they finish high school, mm-hmm. they need to wait a year before they can go to the NBA. It's a new rule. And traditionally, everybody goes to college for that year. Or, you know, may stay in college longer, but at least for 1 year. But he's actually going to go to Europe and play for a year and get paid to play for a year.
Is that a good sign, or does that mean he didn't quite get the college or quite the draft position he might have wanted? He was one of the shorter ones here. Incredible, but not
20 feet tall. Well, he's actually an amazing player. He's probably
totally
amazing. He's probably one of the best point guards around. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. He may set a new precedent where a lot of kids start doing this behind him of going to Europe for a year and then making themselves eligible for the draft.
Our caller, Adam, asked about distribution, mentioned your website. Distribution's an interesting issue today, whether it's in music or video. How are you distributing this, and how are the Beastie Boys being distributed these days? I mean, the whole industry seems to be falling apart
music is definitely falling apart. But Beastie Boys are on Capitol Records, so mm-hmm. our music is distributed through Capitol. But in terms of this film, I actually started an independent film distribution company, and this film is the first movie to come out through it, Oscilloscope Pictures. And there are another number of other films that are coming behind it. There's a film called Flow that's about to come out. That's about the fresh water crisis that's going on in the world now.
Are you directing, producing, involved
no.
or not?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. We're just distributing it. My company is distributing it. There's a film called Front Runners that's coming out, and about the Stuyvesant High School election, which is very interesting. Documentary is cool. And there's a new Michelle Williams film that we're putting out called Wendy and Lucy.
What is it with hip-hop and empire builders? We had Russell Simmons on not so long ago. But I mean, you know, here you got now a film company and music and video and distribution.
I don't know. I mean, I usually actually try and avoid the empire building. Like I've seen enough of it with people starting clothing companies and things and you know, having their own bottled water or something, that it seems like it can just be kind of ridiculous and be a bit of a distraction. But film is definitely something that I really love and was excited to try to do this and work. A couple of guys left Think Film to start this company with me. And I just actually thought I enjoy going to film festivals anyway and looking at movies that haven't come out, so I thought it would be fun to be looking at them with sort of a mind to figure out what might make sense for us to distribute
in the biz a little bit. Let's take a call from Williamsburg, Virginia, and John, you're on the air with MCA Adam Yauch of the Beastie Boys.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. MCA, you guys have been around. Beastie Boys have been around for like 20-some-odd years now.
Like 100 years.
Yeah. My only complaint is I'm always wanting the next album to come out sooner. Do projects like this film project for you, is this part of your creative process as far as distancing yourself away from music to kind of recharge your battery? Same with other bandmates? Or how do you incorporate this different art form into your music? How is it intertwined? And if you could just talk about the process between albums for you guys to get away for it and come back to it.
Yeah, what about that rhythm?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's definitely a cycle of putting out an album and then touring and then taking a little time off and then making another album. And, sometimes doing other things during that time off is interesting. And you get a little distance from it and then come back to it. It's kind of cool. But that's not always the case. I mean, there's sometimes that we've spent 3 years between albums, and we've actually been working on the album for 3 years.
You got a new album coming out soon?
Yeah, we're recording now. We're taking this summer off, but we were recording earlier this year. We will be after the summer.
So hang in there, John. It's on the way. Let's go to Burlington, Vermont, and Tom. Tom, you're on the air with Adam Yauch.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Adam. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey.
Quick question. I'm a pretty hardcore Beasties fan. One thing that's so interesting, I think, about you guys is the kind of musical evolution you guys have gone through, back from hardcore punk through hip hop, and even with your most recent album, The Mix Up, which is an entirely instrumental album for people out there may not have heard. It's a great
mm-hmm.
album.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, lyrically as well, from kind of more earlier party tunes through, you know, even on some of your more recent albums, getting into some political stuff. I'm just kind of curious, with the new album you say you're working on, what kind of musical directions are you guys feeling yourselves going in, coming up? Are you, what can we expect from you guys in the future? Because I'm sure it's going to be awesome. Also, come to Vermont. Thanks.
It's a mix of stuff. I mean, most of the stuff we've done so far is hip-hop, pretty hip-hop based. But you know, we've done a bunch of stuff with instruments, too, where we're playing. So it's a mix of things.
How long can you do it? You started young. You're 40-something now. Can you be a hip-hop artist as long as Frank Sinatra was a crooner?
I mean, the way I view it is as long as we're having fun. Like Adam and Mike and I have a good time when we get together. We'd probably get together anyway and hang out if we weren't working on music. So, you know, I mean, it's something we enjoy doing. So.
Do the new kids, the young hip-hop artists, look at you and say, man, clear off. You're done.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't heard him saying that.
That would take some nerve. Let's go to Virginia Beach and Trey. Trey, you're on the air with MCA.
Hey, MCA, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
First of all, just wanted to say huge fan of the Beasties and really applaud you for just destroying barriers. I think there couldn't be a better way to put what y'all have done. I also want to applaud you for really just the social consciousness that you brought to your music and interesting kind of transition from the License to Ill days where it was more kind of just a hedonistic party sort of thing. And you guys have really transformed yourselves. And basically my question would be, you mentioned Nas and some other artists, and that's another artist who seems to have kind of undergone a transformation, become more positive, and started to view himself almost more as a role model for youth. You had a previous caller who had used some of your music in her work with children, and I've used some of Nas's with mine. My question for MCA would be what he views of himself and more others in the hip-hop community, what they can bring to youth through their work and their minds.
Trey, we've got it. Our time is short, but serious big question. What do you say, Adam?
I mean, I think people...
Is that your job?
Artists making music. I think the job of an artist making music is sort of whatever they want it to be. There are certain people that are going to feel more comfortable trying to put constructive messages into their music, like somebody like Chuck D or Bob Marley, or people that are going to want to do that. And there are some people like Biz Markie that are going to be, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, just, you know, that's not necessarily their role. And I think that's fine either way. I think that, you know, maybe one should be aware of not doing things that are too destructive. You know, there was a time, I think there are certain lyrics on License to Ill where we just kind of were saying like the wildest things that we could think of. Some of it like talking about smoking crack or dust or all kinds of wild things that we just thought sounded like some wild stuff to say. And then I'd have kids coming up to me and saying like, yeah, that's, you know, I'm feeling that, I'm into that. And so I think that as an artist, sometimes you become aware of the fact that music actually can have an effect on people. And so that, you know, I'm sure that's something that different people who make music feel over time.
There it is, straight from MCA, Adam Yauch of the Beastie Boys. This new documentary is gunning for that number one spot, and it is really fun, to watch. Adam Yauch, it's been great having you. Thank you very much for having me on. Hey, well, good luck with the film. Thanks a lot for being here.
All right, thanks.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll go out with Sabotage from the Beastie Boys, 1994. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.